Good morning.
Good morning, and Happy New Year to you.
Well, thank you, and to you, both of you. I hope everything is well. I had a good Christmas, a good holiday, and
awesome.
Santa was good to you and whatever.
Absolutely. And since we're going into a new year here and a new decade, we thought we'd talk about some of the new technology that's in cars. And well, maybe we could talk about the cars themselves to start.
Sure.
You know, the onslaught of electric cars.
Mm-hmm. Well, we still have, you know, a lot of hybrids, and I don't know whether they're really catching on, but you get to see more of them coming out. Ford Fusion's hybrid is actually very popular. Actually was named one of the Car and Driver 10 best cars, and I'm not surprised the Fusion did. The hybrid, well, I don't know. I mean, I can take or leave a hybrid. They're just, you know, another choice. But within the next year or so, GM is going to be unleashing its Chevy Volt, assuming they're still around. And that is a new type of hybrid. Also, Toyota has a new version of the Prius coming out. They're plug-in hybrids.
Okay.
And what that means is you take, when you get the car home at night, you plug it into your, you know, instead of just plugging in your block heater, you plug in the car as well.
Right.
And it recharges the battery overnight. It takes about 8 hours in the case of the Volt. And then you can, you know, you can use a lot more electrical power and a lot less gasoline that way. I've heard the Volt claim that they get like 230 miles per gallon for the average city driver. Right. Whether or not that will be true in real world use, I have no idea. But it sounds great.
How do the costs? You know, do they weigh out okay, or are we going to be spending less on electricity than we are on gas?
That is really hard to say, and I don't know if anybody's even crunched those numbers, but the electricity isn't just going to fall from the sky unless they're solar-powered cars, and, and they're not solar-powered cars. I mean, you plug it into your outlet at home or at the office or wherever. I mean, that electricity has to come from somewhere, and that is going to either mean, you know, more electrical generating stations are required, or people are going to have to, you know, recharge off-peak hours, the usual argument we get from the electrical company during the winter.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm not sure anybody's thought that through yet. But, you know, it sounds good, and it'll save the world.
Like in Canada, we've got plugs in our parking lots all over the place. It's just a regular plug the Volt will use, right?
Yes. Well, otherwise, everybody's going to have to retrofit their house, and nobody's going to buy one.
Right.
Well,
right.
Buy
one anyway. I mean, you know, we don't know.
But I think about parts of the United States further down south where they're not used to having parking lots full of plugs.
No, and in a case like that, I mean, most homes will. They'll have a plug in the side of the house for the electric lawnmower or something, so
right.
You have to do that. And, yeah, maybe just run an extension cord out from your 14th-floor window or something of your office building.
What have you heard about the Volt? What is it going to be like?
Well, you know, it looks pretty neat. I mean, I tend to joke about such things and be suspicious of them just because it's my nature. But it's a Corolla class or a little bit bigger. But again, it's kind of neat looking. It has a nice interior, and you're supposed to go quite far on the electrical, at least 40 miles, they say, on the pure electricity that's stored in the battery from your overnight home charging. So, I mean, at 40 miles, depending on how long your commute is, you might be able to do the whole shebang on electrical power, not use any gasoline at all.
So there is a gas tank in it?
Yes, there is a gas tank in it. Once you start running down the electricity, it will fire up a gas, they call it a gas generator, and you know, to get the electricity back up to power.
So it's not a hybrid. Or is it a hybrid?
Well, it's a plug-in hybrid kind of electrical car with a gas generator. They say the first 40 miles, it gets infinite miles per gallon because no gasoline is burned. But when the generator starts, the car gets an equivalent of up to about 50 miles per gallon thereafter from using the gasoline to power the battery again.
Cool. All right. So we have that to look forward to. And as far as technology that's in automobiles, like Bluetooth, a lot more manufacturers are putting Bluetooth into their automobiles. What else are they putting in there?
Well, besides Bluetooth, we're seeing a lot more voice recognition coming out, and that's a nice thing. Is that, you know, it lets you keep your hands on the steering wheel when you're driving. It's like with Bluetooth as well. You can talk on the cell phone and keep your hands on the wheel, which is always a good thing.
Yeah.
Also, backup cameras, tire pressure monitoring systems. These are not new technologies, but they're just becoming more mainstream. You know, they started out in high-end cars, and now they're filtering their way down to more low-end cars.
As far as controlling all this, this different equipment, What are we looking at using at this point?
Well, the one of my complaints right now with some of the higher-end Hondas and Acuras is just the abundance of buttons on the center stack.
Right.
You know, to control the audio system, the heating, the air conditioning, everything in there. And so what some manufacturers are finding now is they're going the touchscreen route, where, well, obviously you have an LCD screen, and you touch it, but depending on what you're touching, if you're using the stereo, the LCD screen shows the stereo controls. If you're
right.
trying to operate the air conditioning, it goes to air conditioning controls, and then, of course, it also doubles as the screen for the backup camera or the navigation system, and
yeah.
that's the way I really like it. Others, like BMW, Honda Acura, are adding these like cursor control knob like devices that you twist and you move up and down and left and right, and they will navigate through on the LCD screen that way. And I find those ones normally not nearly as good because, well, for one thing, you still have to go through all these menus and you have to twist and turn and push, and it can be really quite confusing.
Mm.
Honda and Acura actually are kind of using a hybrid where they have 1,000 buttons, plus they have this interface, and I wish they'd just make up their mind. I wish they'd all go with touch screens. But, I know some of the manufacturers mount their LCD screens up high, right close to the windshield.
Right.
And I guess the rationale for that is it's closer to eye level, so you don't have to take your eyes as far off the road. But what it also means is that it's too far away to use as a touch screen, so you're limited. You have to use one of these cursor control type thingies.
It's Catfish here in the Live at 8.5 Startup. That's Jim Bray, our Live at 8.5 car crasher who reviews automobiles for a living.
So many car manufacturers are doing some sort of interface inside, but who's doing the best one?
I think the best job, actually, the domestics, Ford, GM, even Chrysler, they have really good touchscreen systems. And on the Cadillac, their LCD monitor actually raises and lowers depending on how you're using it. If you're if you're just using the radio, it stays down with maybe only a centimeter or so showing. That will show your radio station and that. But if you want to use the navigation screen, you press a button and it pops up from the dashboard.
Hmm.
Kind of neat. Ford, with its Sync system, does a really nice job. It's also one of the best voice recognition systems. Voice recognition system qualities are all over the map. I think Ford is some of the best. I find myself, I mean, my diction is reasonable. I feel sorry for somebody for whom English is or French isn't a first language.
Right.
Might have an accent.
Yeah.
Because sometimes these things are really stupid. You have to repeat yourself several times. I was going up to a town about an hour from me on Boxing Day, and I was trying to feed the navigation system with the destination by voice commands, and it was so cumbersome that I was just about at the destination before the thing figured out where I was going.
Are any of these worth the money? They're $1,500, $2,000 to add these systems to cars versus just going to the box store and buying a GPS for $150.
Well, usually the systems come bundled with other things like enhanced audio systems and, you know, automatic air conditioning and that. So it's not really an apples and oranges comparison. And generally, too, if you want the enhanced audio, you have to get the NAS system. I don't know. I mean, I have a pretty good sense of direction, and if I'm traveling around my hometown, a navigation system isn't going to do me a lot of good.
Right.
On the other hand, I was driving professionally a shuttle driver for a local car dealer for a while, a couple of years back, and the NAS system came in beautifully there for going to places that I don't normally travel myself.
And as far as backup cameras, do you see more and more of those coming out, and really, who's going to use those, Jim?
Actually, I think anybody can use a backup camera. I think they're a marvelous invention. They can really help a lot. Now, they shouldn't replace checking your mirrors.
Right.
But again, depending on the system, you can have just a straightforward backup camera that shows you your view behind, usually just when you're in reverse, when you're backing out of a parking space or whatever. I mean, it's not like they're going to have your view back when you're cruising 100 kilometers down the highway.
Right.
They don't do that. But some of them also will have a set of lines on them that help you gauge how close you're getting to the vehicles behind you, which is really nice in a parking lot that, it actually helps you not slam into somebody.
Yeah.
The problem with the backup cameras, though, is that under bright sunlight, they tend to wash out. I mean, it depends where they're mounted, but in my experience, most of them really tend to wash out under bright sunlight, which makes the screen virtually useless. Of course, they work fine under cloudy days and that.
Right.
And also, snowy, slushy weather, they tend to get really dirty, and some of them, you can wipe them off with your glove or with your finger, and then you get in the car and you figure out, and you notice that, oh, it's only half wiped off, so you have to really be careful of that. But on the whole, they're a marvelous invention, and I hope to see more of them.
All right, it's Jim Bray, our Live 88.5 car crasher. Go to live88.5.com for a link to Jim's work. And as always, we end with a tip. Do you have a tip for us today?
Yeah, I have another winter driving tip. We were talking before about, you know, cleaning off the entire car and that. And I just wanted to give a tip for drivers with automatic transmissions. The thing when the roads are slippery is to try to minimize your wheel spin. Now, traction control can help with this. Anti-lock brakes can help with this. But you can do a lot of it on your own, too, by shifting the automatic transmission as if it were a manual. So, okay. for instance, when you're starting out, from, you know, on an icy stretch or something, don't just leave it in drive. Take her down to second and third and, you know, get it up so that, up higher in the gears so that your wheels don't spin as much. Same thing when coming to a stop or decelerating or going down a hill. Downshift it to third, second, whatever's appropriate. And, that way you're helping, you know, the engine is helping you slow the car down, which means you're using the brakes less, which means there's less chance of your wheels locking up and you sliding. Paddle shifters are great for that.
Oh, is that right?
Sure.
Hey? Wow.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you very much, Jim, as always.
My pleasure.